very good morning to you. Welcome into today's program. A tragedy that unfolded 25 years ago today. You've heard a bit of it on local news. We're going back to it today in the program. The beach bylaws, they've been bumped. Sorry, couldn't not say that. Today also we're looking at student accommodation on today's program. Minister Harris was in town during the week. We'll be looking at that, and also on today's program we'll be speaking to the Irish Hotels Federation Galway representative in relation to their concerns about tourism figures for next year. That and much more, including a lovely story about Galway Hospice and how you can attend their tree lighting service this coming Sunday. That and more between now and 12. Just don't go anywhere else. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into the studio. Well, I can tell you that this time on this, well, it was a Monday, 25 years ago, I was sitting in studio, and I do believe it was Siobhan Holliman that was in the newsroom of Galway Bay FM right next door here. And the news broke indeed that Eileen Costa O'Shaughnessy was missing and was found murdered and near Tinker's Lane and near where the Mystical Rose Nursing Home. Subsequently, it's a morning. Went on, her car had been found just at a restaurant, I forget what it was called, just up the Galway Plate, I think it was called at the time, here on the Tuam Road. And from there, the story unravelled. Nobody has been brought to justice on this. But Frank Fahey was a taxi driver himself and joins me on the line because he knew Eileen very well, as did others, including Frank Churum, who joined us at the time, and many others. Frank joins me on the line today. Frank, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. Good morning to your listeners.
Hard to believe it's 25 years and still no answers in this regard.
Yes, 25 years is a long time and no resolution for her family. You know, it's hard to believe that, you know, we could have a murderer in our midst that, you know, killed somebody, such a heinous crime, and haven't been brought to justice. And Eileen was such a lovely person. She was a very hard-working person. She had great nature. She was a very positive person. She loved dancing. She loved Mick Flavin. She'd go anywhere in the country to see Mick Flavin, and you know, dancing was her life and work. She had a serious work ethic. You know, she could work 12 hours a day and was always a worker and a goer. And she loved taxiing. She loved driving. And she was a great people person. And she was a perfect taxi driver. You know, and We still miss her. We still miss her and think of her often. And, you know, she was a part of our community, the taxi community, and we miss her. And I know her family miss her dearly as well.
I remember talking to her brother and her family and everyone in and around the time. And yet every time that it comes to this time of year, the 30th of November, she's always in my mind as well, because 31st of November is when all of this started to unfold. You knew Eileen very early on in taxi life.
Yes, when Eileen started driving the taxi, we both drove the same car. She came on and she did the days, and I did the nights. And, you know, she always wanted to do nights, because nights, as anybody in the taxi business knows, are where, you know, they're much more lucrative financially than days. You know, much busier at night with nightclubs and pubs, and that people use taxis a lot more. But Eileen always wanted to sort of work nights. So there was one occasion I was doing an exam in Ennis, and she worked the night, and she had the misfortune somebody got sick in the car. You know, total mess of the car. The car was off the road for a couple of days, but that put Eileen off going doing nights. It wasn't an experience she had during the day.
Not a nice one. But I mean, the situation then unfolded on the night in question, because at that stage you had radios that went from car to car. But once there was radio silence, there was a concern raised.
There was a concern raised in that Eileen was due to hand over to the owner of the car. He did the nights, she did the days. And then the switchover was to be at 8 o'clock or half 8. And generally, they would sort of communicate by phone as regards that. And then, you know, nobody had seen her. The last, she had picked up a fare in the city centre and headed out towards Clare Galway. That time, it was two-way radios we had in taxis. Now we have satellite tracking. You can see exactly now where every car is in the system right across the country. You know, a taxi could leave leave a car once the system is on, could go to Dublin Airport and you can track him all the way to Dublin Airport. You can work out how long it took him to do there. You can even go into the system and work out what the fare should be, what mileage he clocked, and what speed he did on the whole of the journey.
Okay, so that's
a different situation.
Different situation then. It was a two-way radio.
And
go on,
yeah, and now, as well as that, we have a system in the taxis that you press a button, and it's a panic button, and it freezes up everything in the system inside the taxi company in Big O Taxis. Now, Eileen worked with Big O Taxis, but at the time she was killed, she actually worked with Galway Taxis. But we all the different taxi companies, Galway Taxis, Big O Taxis, Procab, we'd all have similar systems. They'd be different in variations, but, there's a, panic. I know in Big O Taxis, we have a panic, you hit a button and it blanks everything else. The whole system goes into shutdown when there is an emergency. And the operators in the office can pinpoint exactly where that car is and then sort of communicate to the other drivers, say, car, there's such cars in trouble in such an area, and they can pinpoint the exact location and communicate with Garda Síochána in relation to that as well.
Okay. But going back to the night in question, Eileen didn't attend the handover. And a search ensued, and when I was having a conversation with you about this earlier, there was a coordinated search, and you say that day that the certain areas that you go to, that you searched, and when you pass them now, yes, you just think of Eileen, a shed in particular.
Yeah, I coordinated the search that night, and we had 30, 40 taxi drivers, and we searched, and we started out on the Tuam Road where, the car was found, and we worked our way all the way out to what was then known as Kynes and Loch George.
Yeah.
And we went down, around the back of Roadstone, down into Clonacornine, Summerfield, down into Moonchuch, all the way out, even down Cathernashellini, down at the back of down by the cemetery in Clare Galway. And I searched all the way down there myself, and there was way down the back of the cemetery in Clare Galway there, and brings you down on the Clare Galway Curtindullagh Road. And I remember going into a shed on the side of the road down there and searching it. And I know any time I ever pass it now, I always think of Eileen. And, I have another reason to remember Eileen. On the 30th of November is my parents' wedding anniversary. They got married in 1940, but they're both passed on now. But it's a day that sticks in my memory. But, I remember while Eileen was taxiing, I had an accident in Bournemouth. And I was, ended up in the hospital, and Eileen came to visit me. She called up to visit me, and she had a little box of Cadbury's milk tray, the effort she went to come, she had a box of chocolates, she had a lovely nature, and my kids, my older kids, have fond memories of her, in that any time she ever, came to my house, and she came to my house quite a lot, but we changed over like that, we both drove the same car, changed over, and she'd always give them a 50p or a pound, and they often mention her, she was a beautiful person, and she didn't deserve that, and her family didn't deserve it either.
And again, nobody's been brought to justice on this one. So I suppose the conversation we're having this morning is that somebody out there, there's somebody listening to this radio program today that knows exactly what happened on the day. I said this 10 years, at 10 years, I said at 20 years, I'm saying it at 25 years. Somebody out there knows the truth. And after 25 years, it would be nice to find the truth. So now the Gardaí have gone down various lines, but the fact that the car left Galway, cross street, went towards Clare Galway, was found outside the back of the Galway plate or side of the Galway plate from there. I mean, it was terrible what happened, but nobody's been brought to justice, Frank.
Yes, and somebody knows what happens. Somebody had to come home that night, and covered in blood, because it was pretty violent assault. And somebody knows about it. Somebody has to have it on their conscience as well that they committed a heinous crime, and it's the worst crime possible to take somebody's life.
But now is the time to come forward. It's 25 years on. The family have been through enough. They're 25 years older. Eileen was 47 when she died. It's now is the time to come forward and say, okay, I know X, Y, and Z. and give the information on Garda Síochána. The confidential line is there. You can do so confidentially. But give the Gardaí the break that they deserve on this one. And give the family a chance to, I'm not saying shut the case out, but I'm just saying let Eileen rest in peace. She's resting in peace, but let her killer be identified as to who was responsible for her death.
Yes, and the case is still open. And it's still a live investigation, and the Gardaí have done a lot of time and effort into it, you know, to actually try and get a resolution to this. And they literally interviewed every taxi driver, and, you know, we went had several interviews and were all brought in. We had to give DNA samples, and, you know, to eliminate us from the inquiry. And they, you know, I would, you know, beg, plead with people, somebody, if they know anything, no matter how insignificant, and even though it's 25 years later, that, you know, help put her family, you know, at ease, that they know that somebody that should be locked up is locked up. And, you know, her mother passed away since she lived with, you know, not knowing, you know, who killed her daughter. You know, it was a horrible, horrible experience for any mother to have to bury her daughter. Mm. And Eileen's mother had to do that. And, you know, and for her Eileen's son and daughter and her brother and family, extended family, and her husband. And, you know, it's 25 years later. It's time they got closure. It's a long, long, long time.
So the Garda confidential line that you don't need to ring us here on GBFM or anywhere else is 1800-1800-666-111. That's the confidential line that you can ring today. Anonymously, you can give details. That'll be passed on to investigating Gardaí, and that could just bring it a little bit closer to a conclusion. I mean, the various lines of inquiry have been followed by Garda Síochána. It's been well documented in the press in the past. Various lines have been, but not a successful conclusion to this just yet. And I mean, where she was found beside Mystical Rose there, and I remember Siobhan Holliman, I do believe it was in the news, but I remember after the programme bringing her out there so she could see, could she get some audio or otherwise. But it was a rotten day, it was cold, it was rotten, but the car was back in town again.
Yes, yeah, the where her body was found, as you said, is what's known locally as Tinker's Lane, Glomore. It's upside Mystical Rose where her body was found, and it was a horrible experience for the young man that found her body that morning when he was going out farming. He was a local there, and, you know, to sort of come across that as sort of early in the morning,
traumatized
at any time, is a horrible, nasty experience. And then the car was found in, it used to be called the it's now the Galway Plate, it used to be the Wayside Inn, was it, I think?
It was, indeed, Tim Collins' place, yeah. Yeah, the way you said.
So, you know, 25 years later, it is time for closure, and it's time to put the family's mind at ease.
Okay.
And
if you can help at all, 1800-666-111. That's 1800-666-111. You can call us on 091-770-077, and we can pass on details to Garda Síochána. It would be lovely when the 30th comes along if there was closure on this one, Frank. So it would just, at this stage, it would be just... Nice to have closure. It would be. Listen, you mind yourself. Thank you indeed for joining us today. That's Frank Fahey, there, a taxi driver that shared the car with Eileen at the beginning, indeed, when she went out to work as a taxi driver. And she was murdered on the 30th of November, 1997. So may she rest in peace, and her thoughts with her family, who are 25 years old or now. And not easy on any of them. They were quite young at the time. And her extended family and husband and everybody that's there. Yeah, that's been affected. But somebody outside of that circle that I'm talking about knows what happened. What happened in Cross Street? Who got into the car? What is the motive getting into the car? Was it robbery? What was it? Did she know the person? Where was that person going to? Why did they do what they did? Where did they do it? Why did they go to Tinker's Lane? Why did they go back into the Wayside Tavern / Galway Plate? Why did all this happen? But somebody, somewhere, knows something. So please, 1800-666-111, 538,000 is Galway, Garda Station, or call us on 091-770-077.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Keep it local. Working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.
Now, Regan Moynton, last Monday, the beach laws indeed, which were now passed in Galway County Council, the beach law bylaws banning outdoor water pursuits on Monday, were not passed. Let me go to Councillor Noel Thomas, who joins me on the line. I'll go to Councillor Eileen Mannion in a moment on this. So, Noel, good morning to you. You brought this to our attention, so you did, with Baron Nevin, the ridiculousness of it. There was a huge reaction, 6,000 online written submissions. 1,000 written submissions and 6,000 online ones. So 7,000 submissions?
Yeah, it's quite amazing, to be quite honest. It just shows you the level of worry that people have in relation to them. I know myself in the Inn, Keith, I know we were talking the day we spoke to you on the radio, and I think I was at, you know, like 300 or 400 emails at the time. I finished up in the Inn, which I think it was closer to 800 emails, I think, that I actually had received myself personally in it. So, I mean, people are very, very worried about what these bylaws contain. But look at what happened, Keith, on Monday. I suppose we were hoping that it was going to go to a vote and that a decision would be made and as relation to whether we would proceed with these bylaws or do what I would have preferred to see happen, and that would have been to revisit the bylaws completely and start again from new and put a new set of draft bylaws in place that would incorporate zoning areas as well on the beach. But what happened anyway, the standing orders that we have in the council actually have put a stop to that, because back in the 25th of July, we had made a decision in the plenary council to proceed with the public consultation of the draft beach bylaws, which meant that by doing that, that we couldn't revisit this issue again for a six-month period. So I reviewed the bylaws again myself, the standing orders again myself, to see if there's anything we could do about that. So I have discovered that if we get the signature of 20 members in the council, then we can actually overrule those standing orders and go back in again at the next plenary meeting, which will be on the 19th of December, to hopefully go to a vote in relation to this. Now, since that, I spent my time on Monday at the plenary meeting trying to get the signatures together that I needed, and I ended up with actually more than I required. So I will be putting that forward for the plenary meeting on the 19th of December again.
Okay, but like the bylaws that we're talking about and fighting about after our last discussion, I mean, the same bylaws are in place in the likes of Kerry, Waterford, Wexford, I'm told, that general area, and they seem to be working well in a common sense approach. So could you not see that common sense approach working in Galway?
Well, the way I look at that, Keith, is, okay, we can look at the common sense approach if you want, but would we not be better off to do it actually right? So if you look at Clare, for example, you can see that they still have wording there in place of close proximity. I mean, close proximity means nothing. Who's determining what close proximity is? You know, you need to have actual, you know, proper zoning, as I said, to be able to identify these areas. But if I see it, when you look at, let's say in Clare again, we'll go to Fenor Beach. So, like, the point I make on this all the time from the beginning is that not every beach actually needs to be zoned, right? But so if you take Fenor Beach, for example, all that's zoned there is an area showing the actual zoned beach, and then the only stipulation that's there is there are no dogs allowed on the beach. Then if you go to somewhere like Lahinch, then there's you've got the no dogs allowed, you've got an area designated for bathing, you've got another area that's designated for other uses other than bathing, you know. So there's a little bit of talk going into it. But what really catches my attention, Keith, and I tried to search this a lot in relation to making bylaws in this country. I couldn't find a lot. So I actually started looking over in England to see what they do over there. And it's interesting to see what they do. They do it correctly, to be honest, because what they do is, when it comes to bylaws for community facilities or recreational areas, they actually go and they consult with the relevant stakeholders prior to developing any of the bylaws at all. And like, that is all that I'm asking for here on this, is that we would go back and I said to you, discuss this with the relevant stakeholders. Well, what you would find, Keith, if we'd done this is you'd end up with a list of bylaws coming before us in the council that we probably wouldn't receive 20 submissions on, compared to the 1,000 submissions we received on these ones as they are.
Stay with me if you don't mind. Councillor Eileen Mannion joins you on the line. Fine Gael, Councillor Eileen Mannion, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. Were you disappointed that this was not voted through?
Well, which wasn't voted through, Keith?
I mean, the fact that it wasn't considered to be voted through, that it has to go to another meeting, that the bylaws, that it wasn't passed on Monday last,
these are draft.
I know that, yeah.
These are draft bylaws which were on public display, and the public consultation finish on the 25th of November, so extended by 2 weeks. Where I agree with what a lot of what Noel is saying, that, you know, zoning may be suitable for some beaches, but not for other beaches. And across the country, where this wording is in place, you know, as you said, Keith, you know, the common sense approach has prevailed. Look, when we approved these to go on public display back in July, and, you know, at those meetings, the only things that were flagged, I suppose, were in relation to dogs was a concern. And I think I was on with you in July talking about the ban on proposed ban on dogs on food flagged beaches. This wording in relation to the water sports, that wasn't really flagged, or there's no concern highlighted to us or among ourselves, the 39 councillors either, until, I suppose, a few weeks ago. And but now we have had a public consultation. There's been a huge engagement and a huge number of submissions. So I really don't understand why we would withdraw them at this point, because they are draft at the moment, and we have the opportunity. You know, this is going to go back to the SPC for a report will be prepared and brought before us again. So we have an opportunity there to amend the wording, to reject the bylaws, or to adopt the bylaws. So this, you know, this is still a draft, and it's not, we're not adopting them at this stage. It'll come back to us before. And look, there's, you know, nobody wants to ban water sports. That was never the intention. Now, I do accept the wording has caused concern. And like, if I was a water sport enthusiast, or if something that I was involved in, if I thought was going to be banned, of course I'd be up in arms, and rightly so. And I think it's great that we've had such huge number of submissions and engagement, because I think it's really important. I prefer if we, at this stage, and if we adopted these bylaws without, you know, without people having engaged with it. So, like, I think we should let it run. That would be my personal opinion. We should let it run, get the report back, and then we can engage again with the executive, with the councillors, to come up with a wording or proposal that suits everybody.
Okay.
The most important thing is that we respect of people's public consultation, what they put in their submissions.
Absolutely, but I mean, the majority of beaches that we're talking about are in the Connemara region, so they are.
Oh, absolutely, but there's no ban. I would not be in favour of adopting anything that would put water sports enthusiasts or swimmers a ban on those. You know, it's so important for our local communities, especially during lockdown. We saw the huge uptake in swimming and water sports, our tourism products like the Wide Atlantic Way. Forge Ireland are plugging out Wide Atlantic Way beaches, horseman beaches, dogs on beaches, water enthusiasts. There's no way that we would propose a ban on it, and there's no way we would adopt a ban on it. And that, I want to be very clear on that, because there is huge concern. And, you know, I understand people's concerns of wording, even though it's used in lots of counties around the coast with common sense approach, without any... Like, I was in touch with somebody in Waterford, because they adopted the same bylaws last year, the same wording in relation to water sports, you know, not in close proximity to swimmers. And they kind of said, well, you know, it's nothing's happening here, we're fine, everyone's doing the same thing, you know, everyone respects each other. And I understand that there may be concerns on some beaches that there won't be respect shown to each other, and we need to have something in place for that.
But as I said,
we still have the opportunity as a council to amend the wording, to reject the bylaws, or to adopt the bylaws. But we're in the middle of a process, and I really don't see the point in withdrawing at this stage and starting again.
All right, Eileen, thank you for joining us. Councillor Eileen Mannion there. Final word to you, Noel, today. You seem to get one on this one, by the way. I mean, the two of you seem to be at one on this one, but it's a matter of getting the right. But I can also understand, by the way, that if some people are blatantly flouting and bringing jet skis and all that type of stuff in, like Eileen has, that there has to be some kind of law there that can be implemented if they're a bother to other people, or if they're a danger to other people.
Oh, of course, and I mean, that's exactly what we're looking for ourselves. But look, Keith, in relation to all the correspondence that we got over the last number of weeks there, I've got a lot of responses back to the responses that I've given to people. And I have to say, everybody that responded to me were actually in favour of doing what I want to do myself, which is to restart this and to do it properly. I'm not blaming Galway County Council for this or anybody else for it, because it's what we've done is we followed the guidelines sort of that other counties have gone with. But as far as I'm concerned, they're just not good enough. And like, we have a golden opportunity here to come back and revisit this and to do it 100% correct. And that's what we need to do. And as for going to CPGs, look at the pet hate of myself, my own, Keith, I have to say, because CPGs are not the places where these decisions should be made. These decisions should be made in front of a full plenary council by all the councillors there present. And that's where need to be made.
There is a process, though, that can be followed here. And let's see if that process can be followed.
Well, as I said, the process is going to go now to the 19th, Keith, and I suppose it's up to every council themselves what way they want to to vote on the day. I know myself, I'll be pushing to have these draft bylaws restarted again. And there's a lot of other councils that feel the same way as me, but there are some that don't. And like that's the choice that they have to make themselves, you know. And I said, I'll be sticking to my guns anyway in relation to this. And hopefully we'll end up with a great set of bylaws that will be able to fit the purpose for years and years to come.
Councillor Noel Thomas, Councillor Eileen Mania, thank you for joining us today. I believe Councillor Thomas Welby is on the line. Councillor Welby, good morning to you briefly, if you don't mind. What's your thought process?
Yeah, good morning, Keith. Yeah. Look, Keith, in relation to this, I've been working with Councillor Manuel and Councillor McKinstry in relation to the controlling group. We have met representatives there last 2 weeks ago. We explained them what we potentially can do. And what we can potentially do, there's over 1,019 submissions in relation to this. And what we can do is we can look at those. We can make a major amendment in relation to a zoning on particular beaches. And that would be seen then that this is a major change and that the draft bylaws would be amended on the basis of this. They would go back out on display again. And then, so we could be looking at the wording and we can be looking at zoning on particular beaches.
It's gone very technical on me now, so I'm losing listeners, I'm sure. But can I just ask simply, what you're saying there, would it be possible for somebody to take a kayak off the top of the roof of the car and go into, say, Trovon or wherever they want to go without being followed by a guard that you call a blue lights, lifeguards having to do a job they don't have to do, and the law being thrown at them?
Yes, Keith, and they can do that at the minute as The wording that's in Galway, I believe the wording is flawed slightly. There's 23 notifiable actions there. There's one that is causing all the problem. It's S. That is in Cork County Council bylaws for 11 years. And, you know, people are on about the Wild Atlantic Way and that don't disturb it or anything like that and don't have Galway the outlier. All the other counties, Mayo, Cork, Kerry, Waterford, Wexford, they have basically the exact same wording. But the difference is our wording is only in draft form that can be changed. Their wording is in adopted form. Now, I believe the wording, after speaking to people in the industry, are people that are, I can see where they're coming from.
Okay.
And I think, but there is a process within this process. Can I just make one point, Keith?
Just very briefly, because I'm way over on this. Go on, yeah.
Yeah. There's 1,019 submissions. If we stop the process now, we will have to write back to all those 1,019 people. And say,
7,000 submissions, so there is.
No, there's 1,019 with Galway County Council.
6,000 online, I'm told, and 1,000 written submissions.
Yeah, the County Council won't be dealing with the online ones. The County Council will be dealing with the ones that are written that have come into them inside, and there has been overlaps in relation to various emails.
Okay.
As of Friday, there's 1,019 legitimate submissions. We will have to write back to those people to say, we're stopping this process for a month, come back to us in a month's time. You know,
There's three councillors there, Noel Thomas, Eileen Mannion, Thomas Welby. You're all based in the Connemara district, municipal district.
Yes.
Just sort it out and come back with a solution and just make sure it's the right solution for everyone. Thank you to the three of you for joining us today. 9:41.
Galway Talks in association with Tesco. Keep it local. Working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.
A very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Well, on Monday, the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, Simon Harris, confirmed government approval for a new policy to provide state assistance to stimulate the development of new and additional student accommodation for public higher education institutions. We spoke yesterday to President Orla Flynn on this one. But let me go to the President of the Galway Students' Union, Sai Gujula, who joins me again on the line today. Sai, good morning to you. Can you hear me okay there, Sai?
Good morning.
Yeah, I might take you off hands-free if you're on hands-free there, Si, or if you're on a headset, if you don't mind, the quality just coming in isn't great from there. Do you think that the University of Galway can avail of this funding, Si?
Yes, but personally, I think the funding in general, when it's being divided between the three universities for 700 beds, it's actually not a lot, even when the university avails of it and tries to implement it, in the short term, it does not prove to be really effective, whereas students need accommodation now. And even for the upcoming semester in semester two, the accommodation crisis has not died down. In fact, it's just not being talked about, but the crisis still remains the same.
But has the university not embarked on a major, major project in Upper Newcastle there, near the new life sciences building? I mean, there's a massive investment in accommodation there. Would that be covered by this funding?
Yes, there is. Yes, it will be, but based on the article yesterday in the Irish Independent, it was meant to be between the three universities and 700 in total. And Dunlin alone is the new project that the university is building. Will be, we're not even covered as residents, but personally would only provide like some building apartments in there. But even that is not going to be ready for this year. It's going to be for next year. So this scheme is, of course, we welcome it from the government, and it's great to see that it's a step in the right direction. But it's more of a long-term thing as opposed to a short-term solution for students that are stuck in the accommodation crisis.
So you say that the accommodation that's currently being built by Raskin Construction won't be for, well, it won't be for this year, but it'll be for the 23, will it?
Yes, so from September.
From September of next year, it'll be available for people to use.
2023. Yeah.
All right.
So for semester two is like the main issue where students won't. Like students who currently don't have accommodation since they have started in September, they still won't, because even this is gonna be a relief for next year's students, and even in that, a really small proportion of students, as opposed to the vast majority.
All right. Listen, we will come back to it, and we're going to try and get you onto a better line somewhere, and we will come back to it as well from there, because, I mean, the situation is it's student accommodation is at a premium right across the city. Accommodation, forget even student, accommodation is at a premium across. More students want to get into the various colleges in Galway, ATU, and indeed University of Galway, but accommodation is the one that's putting people out. And a couple of weeks ago, you spoke to us about a friend of yours that was travelling from Dublin each day. Did they get any accommodation?
No, so but commuting has been a big thing this year, especially the students like you have mentioned, commuting from Dublin and commuting from neighbouring counties such as Sligo, Mayo, and they still can't find accommodation. And whether there's any reservations for them, and nothing really. Like, there's no even support for them, and the petrol price is going up as well. Like, commuting is just not an option. And then parking is another issue, even when they have their own car.
All right, Sai Gajula, sorry about the quality of the line going in there. We'll try and get a better line, and we'll come back to it tomorrow. And University of Galway has offered us, indeed, President Kieran Hogarth tomorrow on this one as well, if we can, just to see, can they avail of this funding, or because they're in the middle of the current building plan, would it be appropriate? Yesterday, around whatever time it was, 10 to 11, we tried to play a piece of music, Christmas music, each and every year in association with Mace and their Christmas promotions. But yesterday I played Mark Roberts' It's Christmas Time, which has been released this coming Friday. If you want to get further details, we'll give full details as well on it. But it's gone round in my head ever since. Just gone round and round, round in my head. And even last night I was humming it at home. So I decided, as we head towards the 10 o'clock news, to do it all over again.
Galway Bay FM with your local Mace, making your Christmas extra special with festive offers.
There it goes. From there, will I try this one as well? No, it just doesn't want to fire in there for me. We'll figure that one out. There it goes. I'm telling you now, you have to listen to this. It'll be going around in your head like it's going around in my head. It's absolutely beautiful.
Everyone's counting the hours, the minutes for Christmas Day to arrive. The glory of heaven on earth at Christmas time. Sleigh bells and snowflakes, frost on the window. And all through the year we've waited.
Mark Roberts, it's Christmas Time that goes on sale this coming Friday, do believe, and onwards then through all the various platforms that are out there as well. But that's it, you're getting a sneak preview. And he was on with some Molly and Ollie last week, so he was, and you heard its first play there. But it's, I'm really telling you, it'll be going on in your head for a little while, so it will. Today. So again, it's Christmas Time by Mark Roberts. Some of the comments coming into us today. Keith, I've just seen outside the Huntsman when you're coming out of Lough Atholia, the buses keep swinging out into the other side of the road. Last night it was unbelievable. It was a few seconds earlier, it would have ran into me as he came up at such speed. The buses can take the two lanes coming out of College Road. They can take the two lanes to turn up by the G Hotel and go up the Dublin Road there. So do be careful, but they can. They can do what they're doing from there. So quite simply, just be careful. If that's what you're talking about, that's where it is happening, I think. If I'm right, they can take the two lanes. Anybody can, any traffic can. Let's head towards the 10 o'clock news, and we'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
With Tesco, keep it local. Working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.